down the corridor. The revelry usually rolled across the stone floor to meet us. Not tonight. I wanted to fish and see if Calantha had any suspicions of who she had sent up to my room, but she said nothing, so neither did I. I didn't want to raise questions and mistrust where there was none. As we got closer to the hall, the silence was palpable. "They fought, didn't they?" I asked.
"That is the word," Calantha answered.
I saw a cut on Caden's hand.
"And everyone's waiting to see how the Komazar fared," she said.
I stole a sideways glance at her. She chewed on her lower lip. "Why wouldn't the Komazar kill him for that?" I asked. "He seems to tolerate no rebellion and holds the threat of death over everyone else."
"Assassins are dangerous. It's in his favor to keep Caden alive. No one knows that better than he does."
"But if Caden's dangerous, he could be replaced by someone more dangerous. Someone not as loyal. There's a strong bond between them, too. They have a long history together."
"As do you and the Komazar," I said, digging and hoping for more.
She only replied with a curt,
"Correct, Princess. As do we."
The quiet was awkward as I entered Sanctum Hall. Without the usual din, the whole room seemed emptier. Or maybe that was just because tonight the clans, quarter lords, and other special guests weren't filling every available corner. It was only the council and servants. Rafe was standing at the far end of the table in the center of the room, talking to Eben. It was apparent that neither the Komazar nor Caden had come in yet. And then I spotted Venda. She moved through the room, solid as any of us, her hand running along the table as if she were wiping crumbs from it, as if centuries and a push from a wall were inconsequential to her purpose. No one else seemed to notice her presence, and I wondered if they mistook her for a servant. I walked closer, unable to tear my eyes away, fearing she would vanish into mist if I blinked. She smiled when I stopped on the opposite side of the table from her.
"Jezalia," she said, as if she had said my name 100 times, as if she had known me from the time I was an infant and the priests lifted me up to the gods. My eyes stung.
"Did you name me?" I asked.
She shook her head. "The universe sang your name to me. I simply sang it back."
She walked around the table until she was just an arm's length from me.
"Every note hit me here," she said,
and she put her fist to her breastbone.
"Did you sing the name to my mother?"
She nodded.
"You sang it to the wrong person. I'm not..."
"It is a way of trust, Jezalia. Do you trust the voice within you?" It was as if she could read my thoughts.
"Why me?"
She smiled.
"It had to be someone. Why not you?"
"For 100 good reasons. 1,000.
The rules of reason build towers that reach past the treetops. The rules of trust build towers that reach past the stars."
I looked around, wondering if anyone else was listening. Every eye in the sanctum was riveted on me, glazed with an awe bordering on fear. Even Rafe's eyes. I turned back to Venda, but she was gone. Me and frightening madness. That was all they witnessed, and I questioned my own sanity. I saw several soldiers pull amulets from beneath their shirts and rub them. It had to be someone. I leaned against the table for support, and Rafe stepped toward me, forgetting himself. I quickly composed myself, standing rigid. A servant girl shuffled forward timidly.
"What did you see, Princess?"
Three Chievdars stood just behind her, glaring at the girl for acknowledging any power I held that they did not. Without the clans here, they didn't need to pretend. I phrased my words carefully, for fear the girl would suffer for her earnest question. "I saw only the stars of the universe, and they shined upon all of you." My vague answer seemed to appease the naysayers and believers both, and they went back to their quiet conversations, still awaiting the appearance of the Komazar. Rafe's eyes remained on me, and I saw the worry in them. "Look away," I prayed, because I couldn't tear my own gaze free. But then I glanced at his hands, the ones that had gently cradled my face. It would be unfortunate if he began losing fingers prematurely. Convince them. With everyone watching, I had a large audience to convince. I looked away just as the Komazar entered the hall. "Where's my betrothed?" he called, though I was plainly in his sight. A servant rushed to fill his hand with a mug, and both Ratan and Governors stepped aside as he walked toward me. "There she is," he said, as if his eyes had just landed on me. I saw the small cut on his neck, and no doubt everyone else did too.
"Don't be concerned, my love," he said. "Only a nick from shaving. I was perhaps a little too earnest in my desire to be presentable to you."
His eyes danced with warning even as he smiled at me. "Say something," was the command I saw in them. "Say just the right thing." "No need to risk your flesh. You're always presentable to me, Cher Komazar."
"My sweet little bird," he said,
and reached out, placing his hand behind my head, drawing me toward him. He whispered against my lips,
"Make this good."
Who was he trying to fool? The council already knew the marriage was a sham, and I was only a tool for his gain. But then I realized it was for another purpose. He wanted to show he was not thrown by the assassin's attack, and that he still had a firm grip on power. Kissing him when it served me was one thing, but when it served him, it was quite another. I braced myself as his lips met mine, surprised that he was gentle, tender even, but perfunctory on every level. It was an accomplished performance, but then, at the last moment, his hand curled into my hair and his lips pressed harder, passionately. I heard the crude laughter around us and felt the color rise at my temples. He finally let go of me, and instead of cold calculation, I saw unsettled desire spark in his eyes. It was the last thing I wanted to see there. I willed the color from my face. He turned away as if exhilarated and bellowed, "Where's the food?" Servants scurried, and we took our seats, but the conspicuous absence of the assassin hung in the room like a poisonous cloud and kept the normal banter in check. I said the blessing, but before I passed the plate of bones, I took one to keep my hands and eyes occupied, even though my tether already jingled heavy with their weight. It was a small bone, bleached and dried in the sun, as they all were after the cooks buried them in a barrel of meal with beetles so that every scrap of flesh and marrow was eaten away. The larvae of the beetles were used for fishing on a river inlet, which in turn yielded more bones. It was an endless cycle of sacrifice upon sacrifice. I fiddled with the bone, wishing I could wipe away the taste of the Komazar from my lips. I was afraid to look up and meet Rafe's gaze, because I knew what I would see, the strain spreading like a feverish stain across his face. If I had to watch him day after day kissing a maid or being pulled into her embrace, I would truly go mad.
"You're not eating, princess," the Komazar said.
I reached out and took a slice of turnip and nibbled it to appease him.
Eat up, he insisted. We have a big day ahead of us tomorrow. I wouldn't want you to grow faint.
Every day was a big day for the Komisar. No doubt for me it meant more parading through the city or countryside. Curiously, there was only one quarter he hadn't taken me to, the Tomac quarter in the southernmost part of the city. The sudden tramping of footsteps echoed through the hall, and much to the Komisar's dismay, the meal paused. No one wanted to miss the entrance of the assassin, and all were eager to see if he bore the evidence of a brawl. Everyone present quickly took note that there were multiple footsteps coming toward us. Their hands went from plates to the weapons sheathed at their sides. Protected by the impassable Great River, they surely didn't fear the enemy without, so they must always be ready for the enemy within. Bloodbaths, as Caden called them. Caden entered from the eastern passageway. Everyone saw what they wanted to see, the evidence of a brawl, if not a challenge. A blue bruise darkened his jaw, and his hand was wrapped in a bandage, but he had no weapon drawn, and they eased back in their seats. It appeared the Komisar had fared better than his assassin. The odious new governor and his personal guard walked beside Caden. There was muffled laughter from the end of the table where Malik sat with his smug circle of rattan. Caden made a determined straight shot to the Komisar.
"The new governor of Arleston, as you requested," he said, as if depositing a box of cargo at the Komisar's feet. He turned briskly to the governor. "Governor O'Bron, this is your sovereign. Bend your knee and pledge your allegiance now."
The governor did as he was told, and before the Komisar could respond, Caden stepped over between us and leaned with one arm against the table. He seethed fury, and though he whispered, it was still loud enough that those seated near us could hear him.
"And you, Royal, will sleep in my quarters tonight," he hissed. "The Komisar said there's no reason you will not serve us both, and after my long journey, I wish to be served. Do you understand?"
I said nothing, but fire raced across my cheeks. I hadn't seen him this angry since the night he flung me into the Carvacci for attacking Malik. No, tonight he was far more enraged. I had betrayed him personally. I represented every noble of Morrigan, meeting all his low expectations, but now, with a few words, he had met mine, too. I did not take those kinds of orders from anyone. I looked at the Komisar, and he nodded, indicating he approved this shared arrangement. His eyes smoldered with satisfaction, pleased with his assassin's rage directed at me. Caden pushed away from the table and found an empty seat in the middle, across from Rafe. The tension that always sparked between them magnified, their hot gazes fixed on each other for far too long. Rafe couldn't have heard what Caden said to me, but maybe my flushed face was all he needed to see. Chairs were slid aside so the new governor and his guard could sit near his sovereign. The Komisar and governor seemed to connect immediately, but for me their conversation became a blur of sound, disconnected words, laughter, and the clinking of mugs. I watched the governor's lips move, but Caden's words were what I heard. "And you, Royal, will sleep in my quarters."
"And now you'll marry enemy swine?"
My gaze darted to the governor's arrogant, beady eyes. I stood and seized a fistful of his jacket, jerking his face close to mine. "If you say enemy swine one more time, I will tear the flesh from your face with my bare hands and feed it to the hogs in the stable yard. Do you understand me, governor?" The Komisar grabbed my arm and yanked me back to my seat. Both the governor and his wide-eyed guard looked at me in startled amazement.
"Apologize, princess," the Komisar ordered. The governor is a new loyal member of the council and has had little time to adjust to the idea of the enemy walking on Venden soil.
I glared at him. If my supposed newfound freedoms were to be of any use to me at all, I would have to chip away and snatch them a small piece at a time.
"He calls your betrothed swine," I argued.
"It's a common phrase we use for the enemy. Apologize."
His fingers dug into my thigh beneath the table. I looked back at the governor.
"I beg your forgiveness, Your Eminence. I would not truly feed your face to the hogs. It might make them sick."
There was an audible sucking of breath, and time seemed to stop, as if these were to be my last seconds on earth, as if I had at last pushed too far. The silence stretched thin and taut. But then, midway down the table, Grizz snorted. His boisterous laugh cut through the shocked hush. Then Eben and Governor Fywell joined in with laughter, too, and soon the prevailing doom of the moment was washed away by at least half of those at the table joining in at my jest. Governor O'Bron, as if he sensed he was caught in the middle of a swift, unexpected squall, laughed, too, assuming the insult to be a joke. I smiled to assuage the Komazar, though inside I still raged. For the rest of the meal, the governor made an exaggerated point to call me the Komazar's betrothed, which drew more laughter. His guard remained quiet, and I learned he was mute, an odd choice for a guard who might need to sound an alarm. But perhaps he was deaf as well and was the only one able to endure the governor's ceaseless prattle. My toes clenched and unclenched inside my boots, and the fires on either end of the hall seemed to burn too hot. Everything inside me itched. Maybe it was knowing that somewhere in this city Jeb and his fellow soldiers were working to find a way out for all of us. 4. It was a number I had scoffed at. But now it seemed like the precious split-second chance I had taken in the face of a stampeding herd of bison. Risky, but worth it. I thought the evening couldn't get worse, but I was wrong. As they began clearing the platters and I was hoping to leave, a parade of barrow runners began pushing carts into the room.
"Here at last," the Komazar said, as if he knew they were coming.
I saw Aster among the runners, struggling with a cart loaded with armor, weapons, and other booty. My stomach dropped. Another patrol had been massacred.
"Their loss, our gain," the Komazar said cheerfully.
The small bit of turnip I had swallowed seemed stuck in my chest. It took a moment for me to truly focus on the contents, but when I did, I saw the blue and black colors of Dalbrek emblazoned on shields and banners, and the lion, whose claw I bore on my back. The hall was almost as great as the one from my brother's company, and even though these weren't my countrymen, I felt my grief anew. Around me, greed glowed in the Chievdar's and governor's faces. Even this action by the Komazar was not just about booty, but again about fervor. Another kind, like the scent of blood given to a pack of dogs. As the last barrow runners set down their goods, Rafe's chair screeched back and toppled behind him as he stood. The sudden crash turned every head toward him. He walked over to a cart, his chest heaving, looking at the contents. He pulled a long sword from a pile, and the sound of steel rang in the air. The Komazar slowly stood.
"You have something you wish to say, emissary?"
Rafe's eyes blazed, their blue ice cutting through the Komazar.
"These are my countrymen you've slaughtered," he said,
his tone as frigid as his gaze.
You have an agreement with the prince.
On the contrary, emissary, I may or may not have an agreement with your prince. Your claim hasn't yet proven true. On the other hand, I definitely do not have an agreement with your king. He's still my enemy, and he's the one sending patrols out to attack my soldiers. At the moment, everything is still status quo between us, including your very tenuous position.
He held a hand out toward a guard, and the guard threw the Komazar a sword. He looked back at Wraith, casually testing the sword in his grip.
But maybe you're only wishing for some sport? It's been a long time since we have had any entertainment within these walls.
He took a step toward Wraith.
I wonder just how good a swordsman a court emissary might be.
Snickers rolled through the room. Oh, by the gods, no. Put the sword down, Wraith. Put it down now.
Not very good,
Wraith answered. But he didn't put the sword down. Instead, he tested the grip in his hand with as much threat as the Komazar.
In that case, I'll pass you on to my assassin. He seems eager for sport as well, and not as accomplished as I am with this particular weapon.
He tossed the sword to Caden, and with lightning reflexes, Caden stood and caught it. He was more than accomplished.
First blood, the Komazar said.
I found myself out of my seat, moving toward them, but then was caught in the iron grip of Governor O'Bron.
Sit down, girl,
he hissed, and he shoved me back into my seat. Caden stepped toward Wraith, and all the young Barrow Runners scrambled to the outer reaches of the hall. Wraith glanced at me, and I knew he saw the pleading in my eyes. Put it down. But he wrapped both hands securely around the grip and stepped forward anyway, meeting Caden in the middle of the room. The long repressed animosity between them was thick in the air. My mouth went dry. Caden raised his sword with both hands, a moment's pause as each assessed the other, and then the fight was on. The fierce clang of steel on steel reverberated through the hall, blow after blow. It seemed nothing like a match intended to draw only a drop of blood. Rafe's swings were powerful, deadly, more like a relentless battering ram. Caden met the blows, but after a few strikes began to lose ground. He deftly sidestepped, whirled, and swung, nearly slicing Rafe in the ribs, but Rafe expertly blocked the blade with amazing speed and threw Caden back. I could feel the fury flying off Wraith like fiery sparks. He swung, and the tip of his sword caught Caden's shirt, ripping it open on one side. But no blood. Caden advanced again, fast and furious, and their clanging blows chattered through my teeth. The onlookers were no longer quiet. The dull roar of their commentary accompanied each ringing assault, but the governor suddenly shouted out above them all,
"Watch your step, emissary swine!"
and then laughed.
"Shut up!"
I yelled, afraid it would distract Wraith. And then he did seem to falter, his blows not coming as fast or as strong, until at last Caden backed him up to a wall, and fumbling under a series of strikes, Wraith lost hold of his sword, and it clattered to the floor. Caden pressed the tip of his sword just under Wraith's chin. Both of their chests heaved with exertion, and their gazes were locked. I was afraid to say anything, for fear my voice alone would cause Caden to plunge the sword into Rafe's throat.
First blood, farmer, Caden said,
and he swiped his sword downward, nicking Rafe's shoulder. A bright red stain spread across Rafe's shirt, and Caden walked away. There were shouts of victory among Caden's comrades, and the Komazar congratulated them both for an entertaining match.
Strong start, emissary. Weak finish. but don't feel too bad. It's what I'd expect of court puffery. Most of your worries and battles are momentary and don't require Venden endurance.
I fell back against my chair. My brow was damp, and my shoulders ached. I saw the governor and his guard studying me, no doubt thinking I had been rooting for my fellow swine. I glared at them both. The Komazar told Calantha to see to the cut on Rafe's shoulder, not wishing his emissary to die of blood poisoning just yet. And he lifted a mug to Caden. I saw a smug, knowing glance pass between them. Whatever quarrel had recently passed, it was now mended. I would serve them both. In hell I would. A practiced sword could bash his skull in as easily as a steel one. This time I wouldn't be aiming for his shin. I stood and left, my assigned escorts trailing on my heels.
Chapter 48. Caden.
I saw her leave. The evening between us was far from over. I tried to follow, but everyone wanted to gloat with me about my easy victory over the emissary. Easy. The thought made my blood boil all over again. By his third swing, I knew I wasn't fighting an emissary. By his fifth, I knew he wasn't even an average soldier. By the tenth strike, I knew I was going to lose. But suddenly his attack softened, and he made stupid mistakes. He didn't lose. He let me win. Preserving his identity as a foppish emissary was more important to him than parting my head from my shoulders, and I knew that was a prize he very much desired. I swilled back a last gulp of ale and left Chievdar Dietrich mid-sentence, following after Leah. The corridor echoed with my footsteps. I reached my chamber and threw the door open. She was standing there, ready for me, a practice sword in her hand and battle in her eyes. "Put it down," I ordered. She lifted it high in the air, ready to strike. "Get out!" I stepped closer and said each word slowly so there was no mistaking the threat in them. "Put the sword down. Now." Her stance remained defiant. She would kill me before she set it aside. "So I can serve you?" she sneered. I wasn't going to let her off that easy. I was going to let her reel and stew and feel just as shattered as I had been. I took another step, and she swung, barely missing my head. My rage bubbled over, and I lunged at her, catching the wooden blade with my hand as she swung again. We fell to the ground and rolled, grappling for the sword. I finally squeezed her wrist until she cried with pain and dropped it. I tossed it across the room. She lurched to roll away, but I slammed her back down and pinned her. "Stop it, Leah! Stop it now!" She stared at me, her breaths heavy and furious.
"Don't you hurt her, Master Caden. Let her up, because I know how to use this."
Leah and I both looked toward the door. It was Aster, and her eyes were wild with fear.
"Get out!" I yelled. "Before I skin you!"
Aster raised the sword higher, standing her ground. Her arms trembled with the weapon's weight.
"Listen to you," Leah said, "threatening a child. Aren't you the brave assassin?"
I let go of her and stood.
"Get up,"
I ordered, and once she got to her feet, I pointed at Aster.
"Now tell her to leave so I don't have to skin her."
Leah glared at me, expecting me to back down. I reached for my dagger. She grudgingly turned to Aster, her expression softening. "It's all right. I can handle the assassin. He's all bluster, no bite. Go on now. The girl still hesitated, her eyes glistening. Leah kissed two fingers and lifted them to the heavens in a silent command to Aster.
Go,
she said quietly, and the girl left reluctantly, shutting the door behind her. I thought Leah had calmed down, but as soon as she turned back to me, her wrath had returned.
Royal? You will sleep in my quarters tonight, Royal?
You know I'd never force myself on you.
Then why did you say it?
I was angry, I said. I was hurt. Because I knew everything she had said to me about the Komazar and wanting power was a lie, and I wanted to call her bluff. Because I wanted the Komazar to believe there was an irreparable change in our relationship. Because I was trying to keep her here in my room and safe for one more night. Because everything was flying out of control. Because she was right. I wanted to trust her, but I didn't. Because when I left a week ago, she had kissed me. Because I so stupidly loved her. I saw the tempest in her eyes, the waves of calculation crashing and cresting, the weighing every word of what she could and couldn't say. Tonight, there would be no honesty within her. It's a dangerous game you're playing, Leah, I said. And it's not a game you'll win.
I don't play games, Caden. I wage wars. Don't make me wage one on you.
Those are brave, bold words that mean nothing to me. Her lips parted, ready for a biting comeback.
I'm not...
But she caught herself and refused to go on, almost as if she didn't trust herself to say more. She turned away and grabbed a blanket from the barrel and threw it to me.
I'm going to sleep, Caden. You should too.
She was done. I could almost see the weight on her shoulders. Her lids were heavy with weariness, as if no fight was left in her. She didn't bother to change. She lay on the bed and pulled the quilt over her shoulders. Can we...
Good night.
We went to sleep without another word, but as I lay there in the dark, I replayed our earlier conversation in my head. She had hit every note when she explained her decision to marry the Komazar. The resignation, bitterness, throwing my own words back in my face, the regret, the glistening eyes, every single note as if she was singing a practiced song. Her performance was near flawless, but it had none of the genuine weariness that I had just seen now. I'm not going to lie, Caden. But she had. I was certain. I remembered her bitter words to me as we left the vagabond camp when I said she was a poor liar.
No, actually, I can be a very good one, but some lies require more time to spin.
And now, as I retraced the past days, her claim of trying to build a new life here, her kiss, I wondered, just how long had she been spinning one?
Chapter 49. Rafe.
"Have you taken leave of your senses?" I hissed. I sat in a dark storeroom off the kitchen that smelled of onions and goose grease. Calantha had left me here to wait while the cook boiled up a poultice for my wound. "It was an opportunity that dropped into our laps. We can't all show up as paddy-clappers and emissaries. How's the shoulder?" I pushed his hand away. "It's crazy. How long can Orin play the mute? What were you thinking? And who are all those other soldiers that showed up with you? Terrified boys, mostly. As far as they know, I truly am the new governor of Arliston. We ambushed them on the road. Easy pickings. The governor was as soaked as a fish. Nasty fellow. Barely knew what hit him. His so-called guards fairly handed us their weapons in one breath and pledged their new allegiance in the next. I shook my head. Come on, boy, this is a plum position. I don't have to slink about, and I can carry weapons without raising a brow. And spit in my face. On your boots, he corrected. Don't malign my aim. Sven chuckled. I thought you were going to choke when you saw me. I did choke. I still have a piece of apple stuck in my throat. Most of our way here, I wasn't sure we'd even find you alive. I prodded that assassin for miles, but he's a tight-lipped fellow, isn't he? Wouldn't let loose with anything. And the soldiers with him weren't much better. I finally overheard one of them talking around the campfire about the foppish emissary of the prince. Orin, standing by the door to the kitchen, keeping an eye out for the cook, whispered over his shoulder. That assassin is the first one we'll take out. No, I said. I'll take care of him. Sven asked about the details of my arrival, and I told them about my proposal to the Commissar, and how I had played on his greed and ego. And he bought it? Sven asked. Greed is a language he understands. When I told him our stake was a port and a few hills, it rang true. Sven's expression darkened. You knew about that? I'm not deaf, Sven. It's what they've wanted for years. Does she know? No. It doesn't matter. I'd never allow it to happen. Sven peeled back the blood-sodden tear in my shirt and grunted. It was a stupid move you made tonight. I pulled back, only thanks to me. I knew he'd point that out. Watch your step. If they suspected I was anyone other than who I claimed to be, it wouldn't bode well for any of us, especially Leah. We'd end up dead, but she'd end up married to one animal and serving another at his bidding. The wedding was 3 days away. We had to move fast. Where's Tavish? I asked. Still working out the details of the raft. He's acquiring the barrels to tether together. Barrels. In a split-second passing today, Jeb had briefly whispered the escape would be by raft, but I'd hoped I'd heard him wrong. I shook my head. There has to be another way. If there is, you tell us what it is, Sven said. He told me they had already looked at other options, and confirmed the bridge was definitely not one of them. It required too many men to raise and drew too much attention. Traveling on land for hundreds of miles to the lower river wasn't an option either. We'd be hunted down before we reached the calm waters, and there were beasts in that part of the river that did their own kind of hunting. Orin had already gotten a taste of that. His calf had been shredded before Jeb and Tavish managed to kill the monster that had latched onto his leg. They insisted a raft was the only option. Tavish had studied the river. He said it would work. Though the drop and rushing waters sent up a powerful mist, that same mist provided concealment, and there were slower eddies on the western bank. The raft just had to be maneuvered into one at just the right point. It was possible. The other advantage to the river was that it would sweep us out of Venden Reach so swiftly we'd be miles away before they even managed to get the bridge raised to try to follow. And then they'd have no idea where we had exited the river. Orin said they had left their horses and some of the Venden horses we had captured roped off in a hidden pasture some 20 miles downriver. It was the perfect plan, so they said, if the horses were still there, if 100 other things didn't go wrong. I tried to remind myself that Tavish had always been the architect of details. I had to trust him. But I'd have felt better if I could see the certainty in his eyes for myself. I didn't know if Leah even knew how to swim. "How's your leg?" I asked Orin. "Tavish sewed me up. I'll live." "But it needs a dressing, too," Sven said firmly. Orin lifted his pant leg and shrugged. The dozens of stitched lines showing above the top of his boot were red and festering, which explained his slight limp. But it had given Governor Abron and his injured guard a good excuse to join me here. Sven had told Calantha his guard had been attacked by a panther while hunting and was in need of a poultice, too. While we were whispering, Jeb snuck in from another door. "Anyone here need a crab cake?" I smiled, surveying him head to foot. He was the only one among us who cared about the season's latest fashion and whether his buttons were polished. Now he was dressed in rags, his hair filthy, and he fully looked the role of a paddy clapper. "How'd you get stuck with that job?" I asked. "Everyone's happy to open the door for a paddy clapper making a delivery. Happy at least for a few seconds." He made a clicking sound out the side of his mouth, like the snapping of a neck. "We may need to take a few out quietly in their rooms before we make our move." "And he speaks Venden like a native," Sven added. Jeb was like Leah, gifted at languages. He seemed to enjoy their exotic feel on his tongue as much as exotic fabrics on his back. But Sven had learned Venden the hard way. A few years into his service, he was imprisoned, along with two Vendens, in a lesser kingdom. They were captured for slave service, as he called it, working for 2 years in their mines until he and the Vendens finally hatched an escape. "I gathered that you're somewhat conversant now, too?" "I get by," I said. "I don't speak it well, but I can understand a fair amount. As you saw, the Komazar and some of the council speak more Aegis, and Leah helped me with some phrases." Jeb stepped forward, cracking his knuckles. "I talked to her," he said. He had our undivided attention now, including Orin, who looked back at us over his shoulder. Jeb said he saw her just before the evening meal in Sanctum Hall. He'd managed to make a delivery to her room. "She knows we're here now." "All four of you?" I said. "She wasn't impressed by our numbers when I told her." "Can you blame her?" "I'm not impressed either," Jeb answered. Orin snorted. "It only takes one person to skewer the assassin's mine," I reminded him. "Don't forget that." "She gave me useful information," Jeb continued, "especially about paths in the sanctum. The place is crawling with them, but some are dead ends. I've already been stuck in a few and almost fell down one. She also gave me her winnings from a card game for supplies." "That's what she called it? Winnings?" I said. "More like what she swindled. I lost 5 pounds of sweat that night." Sven rolled his eyes. "So she's good at cards and tearing off faces." "Certain faces." I looked back at Jeb. "Did she say anything else?" He hesitated for a moment, rubbing the back of his neck. "She said your mother was dead." The words hit me again. My mother was dead. I told them what the Komazar had said, and his claim that the funeral pyre had been witnessed by Venden riders. Sven balked, saying that was impossible, that the queen was hardy and wouldn't succumb so easily or quickly. But the truth was, we'd all been away for so long, we had no idea what was happening at home, and a new wave of guilt hit me. They all refuted the story, saying it was only a Venden lie to torment me, and I let them hold on to that thought. Maybe I wanted to hold on to it, too. But I knew the Commissar had no reason to lie. He didn't know she was my mother, only my queen, and telling me had helped strengthen my claim. "One other thing," Jeb said, then shook his head as if thinking better of it. "Go ahead. Say it," I said. "I like her, that's all. And I made promises to her that we'd all get out. We damn well better keep them." I nodded. I couldn't consider any other option. Orin blew out a puff, ruffling his straggled hair. "She scares me," he said, "but I like her too. And hang me, she's—" "Don't say it, Orin," I warned. He sighed. I know. She's my future queen. He went back to the door to watch for the cook. We caught Jeb up on other details, including the loss of Dalbrick's soldiers, the match between me and the assassin, and how Sven's face was almost fed to the hogs. It was a sealed kettle ready to explode in there, Sven said. But it's safer that she genuinely hates us for now. Safer for her and us. Especially since Oren and I are so visible. Let's keep it that way for a while. Sven ran his hand along his scarred cheek. She's only 17? I nodded. She carries a lot on her shoulders for someone so young. Does she have any other choice? Sven shrugged. Maybe not, but she came close to revealing her hand tonight. I had to shove her back in her chair. You shoved her? I said. Gently, he explained. She started across the room to come between you and that assassin. I leaned forward, raking my fingers through my hair. She acted impulsively because I did. The strain was making us both careless. Here she comes, Oren whispered, and sat back on the bench next to me. The door swung open, and the cook eyed the roomful. She mumbled a curse and plopped down a pair of tongs and a steaming bucket at the end of the bench. She pulled a stack of rags from under her arm and dropped them next to the tongs. 5 layers. Leave it on overnight. Bring back the cloths when you're done. Clean. She pushed back through the door, her charming instructions complete, and we were left with the suffocating fumes of the yellow-green mixture filling the room. Jeb noted that the stench of horse manure was preferable to the poison the cook had brewed. How it would help a wound, I wasn't sure, but Sven seemed confident. He took a hearty whiff of the putrid substance. "I'd rather have a dose of your red eye," I said. "So would I," he said longingly. "But the red eye's long gone." He took great pleasure dipping the pieces of cloth into the hot liquid and placing them over my gash and Oren's festering leg wounds. For dragging her all the way across the Cam Lantau, that assassin seemed none too fond of her tonight, Sven observed. He's more than fond of her, trust me, I said. He's just incensed that she agreed to marry the Commissar while he was away. I know she had no choice. The Commissar's holding something over her. I just don't know what it is. I know, Jeb said. She told me. I looked at him, dread flooding through me, waiting. You, he said. The Commissar said if she didn't convince everyone that she had embraced the marriage, you'd start losing fingers or more. She's marrying him to save you. I leaned back against the wall and closed my eyes. For you. Only for you. I should have known when she added those words to the prayer. They had haunted me ever since she said them. Don't worry, boy. We'll have her out of here before the wedding. The wedding's in 3 days, I said. We'll be sailing down the river by then. Sailing on barrels.
Chapter 50.
The big day the Commissar promised me began with a fitting for a wedding dress. I stood on a block of wood in a long, barren gallery not far from his quarters. A fire roared in the fireplace at the end of the room, chasing some of the chill away. Every day had grown colder, and a puddle of water on my window ledge from last night's rain had turned to ice. I watched the flames lick the air, hypnotized. I had almost told Caden last night. I came close, but when he said it was a game I wouldn't win, I feared he was right. All it took was one misstep. A confession was on the tip of my tongue, but then the smug exchange between Caden and the Commissar at the end of the evening had flashed through my mind. There's a strong bond between them.
They have a long history together. I could almost admire the Komazar for his brilliance. Who better to have as his assassin than Caden? So intensely loyal. So loyal he would never challenge the Komazar. So loyal he would set aside a knife, even in a fit of rage. Caden was forever in his debt. An assassin who couldn't forget the betrayal of his own father, and who would never repeat his treachery, even if it cost him his own life.
"Turn," Ephira instructed. "There, that's enough."
The army of dressmakers were a welcome distraction. Though a special dress was not customary in Vendan weddings, the Komazar had ordered one, and he wished to supervise the fitting as it progressed. He would issue his approval before final work was begun. It was to be a dress of many hands to honor the Morassi clan, but he had specified the color was to be red, which Ephira and the other dressmakers had clucked about all morning, trying to find just the right mix of fabrics, and seeming satisfied with none. They pieced together scraps of velvets, brocades, and dyed buckskin. They pushed and prodded with their pieces, and a dress finally took form on me as they pinned and unpinned, a labored nervousness to their work. They were used to crafting dresses from their tents in the Jehendra, and not under the supervision of the Komazar. Every time he said, "Hmm," and shook his head, one of the dressmakers would drop her pins. But his comments weren't harsh or angry. He actually seemed preoccupied with something else. It was a side to him I hadn't seen. We were all grateful when Ulrichs called him away to attend to a matter, but he promised to return soon. They worked quickly while he was gone to finish the long, snug sleeves. This time I at least had two, but my shoulder was still carefully left bare to show off the kavah. "What do you know of the claw and vine?" I asked. The women all fell silent.
"Only what our mothers told us," Ephira finally said quietly. "We were told to watch for it, that it was the promise of a new day for Venda. The claw, quick and fierce. The vine, slow and steady. Both equally strong."
"What about the song of Venda?"
"Which one?" Ursula asked.
They said there were hundreds of songs of Venda, just as Caden had told me. The written songs were all long destroyed, but that didn't keep her words from living on in memory and story, though there were few now who remembered them. At least they knew of the claw and vine, and the clans I'd met on the fens and uplands knew of the name Jezalia, too. An anticipation ran through them. Pieces of Venda's songs were alive, in the air, and rooted in some deep part of their understanding. They knew. All the written songs destroyed, except for the one I possessed. And someone had tried to destroy that one, too. The door opened, and they all startled, expecting to see the Komazar. But it was Calantha.
"The Komazar's been delayed. It may be a while. He wishes the dressmakers to wait in the next chamber until he's ready for them again."
The women wasted no time in following the instructions and scurried off with armfuls of fabric into the next room. "What about me?" I asked. "Am I supposed to wait, stuck in a dress full of pins, until he decides to come back?"
"Yes."
I grumbled a seething breath. Calantha smiled.
"So much hostility. Isn't an uncomfortable wait worth it for your beloved?"
I looked at her, tired of her sarcasm, and formed a biting reply, but it suddenly stalled on my lips as I stared at her. She was always trying to hate me. My own words circled back to me. "I think you're dabbling with a bit of power." A power she was afraid to exert. She was like a wildcat circling a hole, trying to find a way to get the bait without falling into the trap. She turned to go abruptly, as if she knew I had glimpsed her secret.
"Wait," I said.
jumping down from the block. I grabbed her wrist, and she stared at my hand as if my touch burned her. I realized that, other than a stiff poke to my back, I had never seen her touch anyone. "Why did you help the Komazar kill your own father?" I asked. As pale as Calantha already was, she blanched.
"That's not for you to ask. I want to understand, and I know you want to tell me."
She yanked her wrist loose.
"It's an ugly story, Princess. Too ugly for your delicate ears. Is it because you love him? The Komazar?"
A small laugh escaped her lips. She shook her head, and I could almost see something large and numbing jar loose inside her.
"Please," I said. "I know you've both helped and hindered me. You're battling something. I won't betray you, Calantha. I promise."
The air was taut. I held my breath, afraid the slightest move would push her away from me again.
"Yes, I love him," she admitted, "but not in the way you're thinking."
She walked across the room and stared out the window for a long time, then finally turned and told me. Her voice was detached, vacant, as if she spoke of someone else. She was the child of Charmides, a member of the Ratan. Her mother had been a cook in the Sanctum, who died when she was small. When she was 12, Charmides seized power and became the 698th Komazar of Venda. He was a suspicious man with a heavy hand and short temper, but she managed to mostly avoid him.
"I was 15 when I fell in love with a boy from the Murasi clan. He told me clan stories of other times and other places that made me forget my own miserable life. We were careful to keep our relationship a secret, and managed that feat for almost a year."
Her chest rose in several slow breaths before she went on.
"But one day, my father caught us in the servants' stable together. He had no reason to be angered. He cared little about me, but he flew into a rage."
She sat on one of the dressmaking stools and told me that back then our current Komazar was the assassin. He was a young man of 18, and he had found them both bleeding into the straw. The boy was dead, and she was half dead. The assassin scooped her up and called for a healer. The bruises faded, the bones mended, the torn patches of hair grew back, but some things were gone for good. The boy and your eye. My father came to see me once during the weeks that I lay bedridden. He looked down at me and said if I ever did anything like that again, he would take out my other eye and my teeth as well. He wanted no more bastards running through the sanctum. When I could walk again, I went to the assassin, opened his palm, placed the key to my father's private meeting chamber in it, and pledged my loyalty. Forever. The next morning, my father was dead. She stood, pulling back her shoulders, looking drained.
So if you see me both prod and thwart, Princess, it's because some days I see the man the Komazar has become, and some days I remember the man he was.
She turned and walked toward the door, but I called after her just as she opened it. "Forever is a long time," I said. "When will you remember who you are, Calantha?" She paused briefly without responding, then closed the door behind her. I had been waiting so long I hardly noticed the door easing open. It was the Komazar. His gaze landed on the dress first, then rose to my face. He closed the door and took another long look. "It's about time," I said. He ignored my remark, taking his time as he approached. His eyes skimmed over me, touching me in ways that made my cheeks grow hot.
"I think I chose well," he said.